we want to make sure that we're standing up for the rights of middle-class families in Alaska.
Union workers in Alaska hold rallies around the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 5th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a program that's delivering more fresh fruit to schools in rural Alaska.
We had kiwis, apples, and pears, and oranges.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
With less than 2 weeks remaining in this year's legislative session, lawmakers don't have much to brag about when they go home this year. So far, only two bills and a handful of resolutions have passed both the House and Senate. That's out of nearly 350 bills that have been introduced. APRN's Dave Donaldson joins us from the Capitol. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
So, Dave, is there a problem with legislation this year, or is there nothing really of substance?
Well, everybody's watching the money, of course, but the House and Senate just don't seem to have agreed on anything else. Where people wanted a boost from the governor, all they got was a tax reform bill that split them apart, even along party lines. Just to expand on those numbers that you just mentioned, those two bills that have passed, the House has passed and sent to the Senate only 27 bills all year. It's only got about 10 more ready for votes. The Senate has only sent to the House 8 bills the entire year, and only 6 in its Rules Committee. And the problem is that once they get these bills, they don't really care very much about, what they do with them, because none of them are very exciting. So it's just a matter of there's nothing important going on.
And what is remaining that the public will notice? Is there anything except the budget?
I only see a couple of bills that might be considered high priorities. The Senate has, I think it really does want to approve a continuation of the senior benefits program. And there's finally some agreement dealing with the coastal management program that seems to be developing. But other than that, though, the rest is just going to be points of local or special pride, as of the adjournment anyway, unless we get a surprise.
The extension of the coastal management program started getting attention and some traction near the end of last year, too, but it didn't make it. How is it looking this year?
Well, Bethel's Lyman Hoffman today said the governor has recognized that when he gets a bill, it's going to have some changes to it. So it appears that the governor is just operating a little differently. He's trying to make improvements rather than just to stop change, which is what he was doing all during, the early part of the session. Rural members during this year have threatened to just let the federal government take over. And at that point, the supporters of the development industries started listening to them and started negotiating with them. They don't want the feds in doing it. They don't like the state one, but they really don't want the feds. So what's going now are that, we got some compromise. One's in the House, one's in the Senate. Those two will eventually get together. Settlement of this is not out of the question right now.
There's certainly been a lot of back and forth about changing the oil tax system this year, basically tax breaks for oil producers. Critics have said that without any kind of commitment from the producers to actually invest in more production, that this shouldn't happen. What's happening with that? Is that on the horizon for final action?
I don't think anybody really expects it to happen this year during the session. There's still some talk of a special session, but I don't even get a whole lot of interest in this. There simply is too much of a split between the House and the Senate. It was close, just within the House. There's only 22 votes in favor of it. A lot of people said, the governor's not going to call a special session. He said he won't call a special session. I think it's something that's just going to have to cook for a while. Members will just have to see for themselves that change is necessary, and so far they have not been shown that. They're not seeing that a tax break is going to give them any change. And the governor's just going to have to give some proof that the changes he wants will get the results he wants from the oil companies. Once that shows up, things could start moving again. People could start listening to him. But right at this point, it's pretty slim.
All right, Dave. Well, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from Juneau. Fairbanks area union members rallied yesterday in support of workers' rights. National Education Association Alaska President Barb Angayak says the event at Pioneer Park was part of a national call to action to highlight the importance of organized labor.
The rights of workers are the rights that are a part of everyone's civil rights. So we want to make sure that we're standing up for the rights of middle-class families in Alaska.
Across the country yesterday, more than 1,000 labor rallies were held, including six in Alaska. The events marked the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination 43 years ago when he was in Memphis to support striking garbage collectors trying to establish union rights. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander reports on the Juneau rally.
It took two men to hold the banner that condensed the rally message. We are one, standing together for working families. Other signs read, union rights are human rights. The middle class is union made. And another large banner quoting President Barack Obama, labor unions are part of the solution, not part of the problem. The rallies were part of the push against the anti-union sentiment that is springing up in some states, such as Wisconsin and Ohio. In Juneau, more than 150 gathered after work in front of the state capitol, where Democratic legislators cheered them on and promised solidarity. Former State Labor Commissioner Tom Cashin warned that budget problems in those states are being blamed on the unions, and it could happen in Alaska.
And I always say it can't happen here, but wait till he gives the $2 billion a year back to the oil companies, and then we have our own financial crisis. And guess whose fault it's going to be? Public employees that are causing the problem.
Cashin was talking about Governor Sean Parnell's proposal to reduce taxes on Alaska oil producers. Parnell hopes it would result in more oil exploration, while critics are concerned it would lead to the same kind of budget problems other states are facing. One sign at the rally read, "This is not a protest. This is a movement." Pro-union rallies in support of Wisconsin public employees have been held across America since Wisconsin's governor introduced legislation to reduce bargaining rights. Anchorage Representative Les Guerra likened the effort to the civil rights movement to the 1950s and 60s.
You know, if Martin Luther King were alive today, he would be in Wisconsin. He would be in Ohio. If we needed him up here, he would be in Alaska.
Rallies are wonderful, but you should inject yourself into the community more.
Fairbanks Representative Joe Thomas brought a strong union background to the legislature. He told the Juneau crowd that unions need to become involved in the local business community and chambers of commerce.
You need to be there to make your case for the equality of workers. You are the only voice for all workers, not just organized workers, all workers. That means the unorganized folks that oppose you and think that you're benefiting more from the system than they are uninformed. You need to make sure that they understand the message that you are doing the work for them. You're making sure that the minimum wage is increased, that there are unemployment benefits, that there are workers' compensation benefits.
Workers' rights are
We Are One was the slogan for similar rallies that stretched from San Francisco to New York. Besides Juneau, the Alaska rallies drew crowds in Ketchikan, Anchorage, the Matsu, Fairbanks, and Saldatna. In Juneau, I'm Rosemary Alexander.
Workers' rights are human rights.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, lost travelers in the YK Delta survived two nights in the cold.
They were wet and cold, but they were still had that drive to, you know, return to their destination.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Federal regulators are moving towards setting a hard cap that would limit Chinook salmon caught as bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska. If a fishery exceeds the cap, it would trigger an automatic closure, and the fleet would have to stop fishing. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council met over the weekend in Anchorage, but final action will wait until June when the council reconvenes in Nome. The cap could come into effect as soon as next year. KMXT's Jacob Resnick has more.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council's staff analysis found that Chinook bycatch follows predictable patterns, with spikes coinciding with the pollock fleet trawling in the Gulf of Alaska. Teresa Peterson of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council is one of those who had encouraged the council to set the cap at 15,000 fish. The council opted to set the cap higher. 22,500 was the number agreed to on Saturday.
I think this sends a great message to the industry that there are limits on bycatch, and there are concerns from many around the state that the bycatch is impacting the returns to our struggling systems in the Gulf.
Caps have been resisted by the pollock industry. An alternative proposal would have created mandatory cooperatives. These cooperatives would monitor bycatch numbers and allocate bycatch levels between vessels. But lawyers from the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration advised the council this structure wouldn't be legal, as it would be devolving managerial powers from regulators to private industry.
So that basically took that option off the table.
That's Julie Bonney of the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank, which advocates for the pollock fleet. She predicted a cap would be difficult for the fleet as allocations for pollock are on the rise.
See, the cap is, you know, doesn't fluctuate, so you have more pollock you have to catch with the same amount of salmon. So that's going to be difficult.
Local returns of Chinook king salmon have been weak. That's triggered the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to limit this summer's king salmon sport fishery on the Karlik River to catch and release only. On the Iakulik, the bag limit will be one fish with a season maximum of two. With similar restrictions around the state, Peterson praised the council's apparent willingness to impose a cap as a way to bring relief to faltering runs across Alaska.
This is moving really quickly through the council process, and so the preferred alternative is set up to adopt final action in June. And that would actually allow for a mid-year implementation next year where the cap would go in place in the middle of 2012. And so things are moving really quickly, and the council's action is very responsive to the ongoing concerns.
The Chinook bycatch plan would also extend observer coverage to under 60-foot vessels. None of this is final. The council will revisit the plan at its upcoming meeting in Nome. Last year's bycatch total of about 51,000 Chinook automatically triggered consultation with lower 48 fishery managers in accordance with the Endangered Species Act. That's because the Gulf of Alaska is a major feeding ground for salmon who return to rivers in British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, California, and Asia. Yet how many Chinook in the Gulf of Alaska are hatchery fish and how many are from wild rivers is still controversial, and will take expanded genetic stock testing to better understand the origins of these fish.
In Kodiak, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Two men from the Bering Sea village of Chivak survived two stormy nights in the wilderness. The barren coastal flats where they were lost left no cover, and strong winds kept aerial search teams at bay. According to the volunteer searchers that found them, they're alive only because they listened to advice they got from their elders. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
If there's one thing survival experts repeat over and over, it's this little piece of advice.
Don't know where you are, you need to stop and think, because if you keep going, you can be out in the middle of nowhere.
That's the head of Chivak Search and Rescue, Roy Achak. He says stopping can conserve your gas on a snow machine, but it also makes you easier to find when the search teams come looking for you. Achak was one of many volunteers in the Bering Sea coastal area that spent their weekend looking for two lost travelers. Alaska State Troopers identified them as Leon Olron, age 24, and Tom Jones, age 28. The two were in the midst of a whiteout when they lost their way home.
Whiteout and stormy at the same time. Ground storm, real bad ground storm.
Those conditions made it nearly impossible to search. Aerial assistance was offered by the Alaska State Troopers who flew in their C-130 to the area, but it was too windy. Atchak says even the Alaska Army National Guard Black Hawk helicopter had to turn back.
That's how bad it was.
But volunteer search and rescue teams from Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay hit the ground. They're all too familiar with what can happen to stranded travelers on the harsh coastal flats.
We don't have trees like the YK Interior Delta area, you know, where they can seek shelter, you know, we're exposed.
Early Monday morning, a Chivac team headed towards the mountains. There, they were surprised to find the two lost men riding their snowgo towards home.
They were wet and cold, but they were still had that drive to, you know, return to their destination.
The search team helped to escort them to the village. Jones was uninjured, but Thomas Olron was medevaced by helicopter for frostbite. Coordinator Mark Olron asked a few questions to see how they survived two nights with barely any survival gear.
He told me that he had advice from the elder that if there's any no way for them to get to their destination, he stopped and then made shelter away from the wind. So that might have been the one that keep them alive.
When they were found on the trail, weather conditions had improved substantially, and Atchak says the two likely decided it was finally time to go home. I'm Shane Iverson.
The story of the two North Pole men rescued last week after losing their way in a snowstorm on Mount Hayes could have been tragic if not for the skill of an Eielson-based helicopter pilot and the mountain climber's experience. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Alaska State Troopers identified the two climbers as 36-year-old Joel Dobson and 25-year-old Andrew Crone. They're experienced climbers, and they knew they were in trouble, so they set off their personal locator beacon, and then they built a snow shelter to hunker down in and wait out the storm. Alaska Air National Guard spokesman Major Guy Hayes says both Dobson and Crone did everything right.
They were very well prepared. They let people know where they're going, what they were doing, each step that they were taking, and that made it a lot easier for us to go out there and rescue them.
During his 20 years in the business, Alaska Air National Guard Major Brian Kyle has flown his share of missions to rescue mountain climbers in trouble, mostly on Denali or surrounding peaks. But Kyle says he can't recall any climbers being rescued from Mount Hayes, a nearly 14,000-foot peak on the eastern portion of the Alaska Range, about 50 miles southwest of Delta Junction.
It was a difficult rescue. High elevation, about 11,000 feet with some gusty winds there coming off the peak. It was interesting. You know, it's more difficult than your general rescue.
Kyle downplays the difficulty of the mission, but try to imagine flying a helicopter in a rugged, high-elevation area during a winter storm, looking for two climbers and trying to avoid getting slammed into a mountainside by a wind gust. The bad weather made Kyle scrap plans to drop off four rescuers. Kyle says his crew finally got a break late Thursday afternoon when the storm subsided.
The weather cleared enough to where we were able to locate the climbers on the ridge there. And so we ended up dropping a bunch of those guys out, about 2,000 pounds worth of gear and fuel out of the helicopter, and then made the rescue with the helicopter itself two-wheel hover on the ridgeline there to pull them off.
Kyle says the two-wheel hover is a maneuver that requires setting the two front wheels on the ridge and then maintain that position, keeping the aircraft level, parked on the ridge with the tail sticking out over the drop-off, rotors turning, until the climbers could be brought safely aboard. The climbers were then taken to Eielson, where they were treated and released. The crew from the 212th later picked up the ton of gear that they dropped off to lighten the load. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Information at distance.uaf.edu/learn.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety.
operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska pipeline for over 30 years.
A program that provides healthy snacks to elementary school kids is expanding. KDLG's Daisha Eaton explains how it will affect kids in rural Alaska.
Kindergartners at Dillingham Elementary School are learning about fruit.
What kind of fruits have we had?
We had kiwis, apples and pears and oranges.
That's Ariana, one of 17 kids in Mrs. Snellgrove's kindergarten class at Dillingham Elementary. She gets a fresh fruit snack several times a week. Today they're eating her favorite, kiwis. The snack is provided through the USDA Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program. Recently, the USDA announced it's expanding that program. The USDA increased Alaska's funding for the program by nearly $500,000. That means more kids in rural Alaska, where fresh fruits and vegetables can be expensive and hard to come by, will be included.
Huge. The current year that we're in, the current school year, we were able to fund 27 school districts at 142 schools. So it's really exciting to see how much more we're going to be able to expand this program throughout Alaska.
That's Joe Dawson with the Alaska Department of Education and Development, which administers the program in Alaska. The Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program started as a pilot in 2002 in 8 states. In 2008, it expanded to low-income schools in all 50 states, including Alaska. Each year since then, there have been small increases, but this year's larger increase is part of the Obama administration's effort to fight obesity and improve nutrition in public schools. Dawson says in Alaska, it makes a big difference.
This year, I talked to two schools who their children had had pears, fresh pears, for the first time. You know, until then, it had always been canned pears. And you know what? What a great thing to actually try and have, you know, fresh produce. We have some schools who can only provide the fresh fruit and vegetable snack once every other week because the cost is so high. But we still really want to see the program in every location that's eligible, just so that children have the experience of the fresh produce, because otherwise they might not.
Up until now, even though many schools qualified for the program, some weren't getting funding because the state just didn't have enough money to go around. Now those schools will be able to participate. Back at Dillingham Elementary, they finished their fruit, and now they're singing about it.
An apple a day keeps the doctor away.
In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Colorectal cancer is the third leading cause of cancer-related death for both men and women in the United States, according to the American Cancer Society. This year alone, the Society estimates 141,000 Americans will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and nearly 50,000 will die from it. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more on efforts to expand colon cancer screening in Alaska.
Becky Kozlovich and I are about to enter Nolan the Colon.
Nolan is a 25-foot-long replica model of the human colon.
So we're going to take a walk through it, huh?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, let's go. Kozlovich works in outreach for the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. She and Nolan are on a tour of the region this spring to raise awareness for colorectal cancer screening.
We start on this end. We don't want to go in the end end.
Once inside, Kozlovich points to healthy colon tissue.
It's nice and smooth, pink, looks nice and clean. And to keep your colon healthy, don't use tobacco, don't smoke, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, stay physically active, and have your regular colon screenings.
Starting at age 50, men and women should get regular colonoscopies every 10 years, more frequently if a doctor says you're at high risk. Colonoscopies can detect and remove polyps, which, if left alone, can turn into cancer. Untreated colon cancer can grow outside the colon and reach your lymph nodes.
And your lymph system runs throughout your whole body. This provides a pathway then that the cancer can move to other parts of your body. We don't want that.
You can wait till somebody gets cancer, deal with the social costs, deal with the family costs, and deal with the economic costs, which are staggering. Or you can try and prevent cancer, which is cheaper.
Anchorage State Representative Les Guerra has introduced legislation to require Alaska's retiree health care plan to cover the cost of colorectal screenings. They're already covered for active state employees, and state law compels private insurance companies to cover the tests. Under the Federal Health Care Reform Act passed by Congress last year, Medicare beneficiaries are entitled to one free test every 10 years. Garris says it doesn't make sense for the state not to cover retired public employees.
It's close to insanity because that's the group that needs it the most. And the fact that the state has excluded that group of people from colon cancer screening, we think is the wrong way to go on public health.
House Bill 11 has bipartisan support and had a hearing in the Labor and Commerce Committee about 3 weeks ago. But Chairman Kurt Olson's office says it may not come up again before the legislature adjourns. Guerra thinks part of the resistance is due to a $4 million per year price tag placed on it by the Parnell administration. He says the administration is overestimating the number of additional screenings the state would have to pay for if the bill passed.
If they just measured the relevant group, they'd find it saves money.
The State Administration Department cites a consultant's report estimating that colorectal screenings covered by the state's retiree plan would double under Guerra's bill. Acting Director of Retirement and Benefits Jim Puckett says he asked the consultants if they were confident in that figure.
That's my job. If I have a doubt, I'm supposed to question. I'm supposed to ask, push back on it. But they felt comfortable enough with the data that they said, "Hey, we're going to stick with these numbers here." It's not a matter of us being against preventive screening. Hey, we have no position on that. These are just the numbers.
Guerra's bill is backed by the American Cancer Society, AARP, and the Alaska Commission on Aging. Back at Nolan the Colon, Bob Dahl, president of the Retired Public Employees of Alaska, sees an opportunity to spark legislative action.
We should take the entire legislature through it. It would be a vivid demonstration to them of what the objective of all of this is. But there is also a human dimension to it, which seldom is properly addressed.
Lawmakers missed their chance to visit Nolan in Juneau. The next stop on his Southeast tour is April 23rd at the Haines Community Health Fair. He'll be on Prince of Wales Island for several events in early May and at a tribal health fair in Sitka on May 7th. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Daisha Eaton in Dillingham. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. One answer to our state's declining oil production? Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.